2 weeks ago, I stood at this podium and preached about love and how the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. wanted us to understand what love means. I may have forgotten to tell you that there would be a quiz this week. Are you ready? Before we get to that, what's your memory of that moment when there was a pop quiz in class? You, right? I suspect that for some of us, that moment calls up some strong feelings and memories, maybe even a little bit of trauma. It's important to recognize all those feelings. I remember the instructions to clear off our desks and the quiet thunder of a couple dozen piles of books and other supplies being dropped, thump, 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 on the floor all around the room. I remember being told to have a pencil ready. Sometimes I had to get out a blank sheet of paper. Sometimes I was handed a paper that had some words on it, but mostly spaces in which I had to write the correct words or numbers down into. That moment just before starting to write was always an anxious moment. Sometimes I felt anxious about whether or not I was going to be able to do well. There was one time in college when that test was handed to me, and I was sure it was written in another language. Sometimes I felt anxious to begin in the sense that I was anxious to begin. I felt I had stuff to share, and my pencil or pen would scurry across the page. The point is, we all have experience with these kinds of little fears and big fears, anxieties and pressures. To be quizzed is to have an experience in some small little way of coercive power, right? To be quizzed is to have an experience in some small way of coercive power. Sitting at my desk, I was not the one with the power. I was one of the subjects upon which that power worked. Maybe this is a silly example to start a sermon out with that purports to be about liberating love. Because I am not going to start preaching now about how kids need to be liberated from having to go to school or take tests even. I like school. I even think that kids should have to go to school even. Some sort of schooling. We need learning and education. And we also need liberation. So what does that mean? When I hear the word liberation, when I've been used to hearing that word liberation, what usually I would think about are things like racism and sexism and homophobia and transphobia. These days, I'm thinking of the Palestinian people and their need for liberation. And I'm thinking of the hostages held by Hamas and their need for liberation. I'm thinking about the human investment in causing trauma in other humans. I'm thinking about the imperative need for a ceasefire in the Middle East. I'm thinking about how yesterday was the day designated by the United Nations as Holocaust Remembrance Day. I'm thinking about the other remembrance days that the United Nations might set. I'm thinking about the need we humans have for healing. I'm thinking about the human need for transformation. I'm thinking about how badly we humans, all of us, need liberation. The experience of a little quiz is dwarfed by all of that. So, no pressure then, right? Tell me. What was the kind of love that Dr. King was interested in?
Agape.
He took home a copy of the sermon. I saw him do it. I gave it to him. Agape. So, yeah. What kind of love is agape love? Agape love is unconditional. Yes, unconditional. He called it disinterested. King called it disinterested because it is a love that isn't interested in what it can get for itself. That's why he called it disinterested. It's not that love doesn't take an interest. It's that love isn't interested in what it can get back, what it's going to gain. Agape love is a love that recognizes that we are all interrelated, all part of one web of life, that we have an interbeing. That's the way Thich Nhat Hanh would say that, the Buddhist Thich Nhat Hanh. In words that didn't make the quotation cut for my last sermon, King tells us that agape is love in action. Agape is love seeking to preserve and create community. It is insistence on community, even when one seeks to break it. I also didn't quote the line from an article that King published in 1957, where he says, "There is nothing in all the world greater than freedom." And just a paragraph later in that article, King quotes the last lines from My Country, Tis of Thee, "From every mountainside let freedom ring." And in 1957, King writes, "This must literally come true. Freedom must ring from every mountainside. Yes, let it ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, from the prodigious hilltops in New Hampshire." You hearing, you recognizing this? He practiced this speech he did in 1963 beforehand. He was rehearsing the love and call for freedom. He made of love and freedom a practice. That's 5 years before the I Have a Dream speech. So there's nothing greater than freedom. So why am I and others talking about love all the time? Why aren't I talking about freedom all the time? I think that's in part because that wasn't the real innovation or gift that King brought to us. What he did was show us how it is love that gets us to freedom, that it is love that brings about the transformation of the society. Freedom is great, but I believe love is greater. And in 1967, 10 years after that essay, King is saying, "I've decided to stick with love, for I know love is ultimately the only answer to the problems of humankind. And I'm going to talk about it everywhere I go," King says. It's good to be free, but free to do what? And what should guide how we answer that question? And I think the answer is love. In new language proposed for the bylaws of the Unitarian Universalist Association, of which this congregation is a member, language provisionally approved last summer and up for a final approval this summer, love is explicitly put at the center of what it means to be Unitarian Universalist. There have been some UU voices that have said that that's not right. It should be freedom that's at the center. Or maybe reason. But to my understanding, freedom and reason, as necessary as they are, need to be guided by something. Freedom for what? To do what? Freedom from what? In the new statement of values, it names reason and freedom, but it grounds them in love. It says, "We draw from our heritages of freedom, reason, hope, and courage, building on the foundation of love. Love is the power that holds us together and is at the center of our shared values. We are accountable to one another for doing the work of living our shared values through the spiritual discipline of love." The spiritual discipline sermon, that's another sermon. This is about love and freedom. And I don't think it's all that radical to understand UUs as a people centered on love. Right behind me is evidence that this is kind of a long-standing practice. There's this quilt right behind me that this congregation put together. The congregation voted on all these words that are on the quilt, I'm told. There are all kinds of value words around the boundaries of that quilt: compassion, truth, courage, justice. And right in the middle, love is the doctrine of this church. Right in the middle. Was there any debate in the congregation about putting love in the middle like that? No. No. Love is at the center of who we are. It just is. The love that is our doctrine is the active agape love that King talks about. The new language for the bylaws describes the purpose of the UUA. This is the part that's being revised is the principles and purposes is what it has been called. So it's establishing what is the UUA for. It's a little bit different from what a congregation is for. The UUA is made up of all our congregations coming together. So what is the UUA for? Why do we have a UUA? In the proposed language, it does something that I think is kind of amazing. It puts love and freedom together. And it says, the Unitarian Universalist Association will actively engage its members in the transformation of the world through liberating love. Easy peasy. The UUA will actively engage its members in the transformation of the world through liberating love. Our understanding of love needs to be liberated. It needs to be liberated from the dismissible sentimentalism we are more comfortable with. If love isn't just about sentiment, isn't a feeling that one has for another, if love is about creating beloved community, if love is about liberation, then love is no longer tame. Love actively challenges us. Love wants our liberation. This love, says Dr. King, might well be the salvation of our civilization. In another place, he talks about it as the key to ultimate meaning. What this love may bring about, if we are courageous enough to commit ourselves to it, is liberation, which is to say, real transformation of our society and ourselves. As James Baldwin says about love, love takes off the masks that we fear we cannot live without and know we cannot live within. The idea of a liberating love carries with it resonances from the school of thought and practice called liberation theology. Liberation theology was developed by a bunch of radical Catholics and others in Latin America in the 70s. These theologians argued that, quote, we can be followers of Jesus and true Christians only by making common cause with the poor and working out the gospel of liberation. Liberation theologians understood poverty as oppression. They said poverty doesn't exist because some individuals are lazy or ignorant. They said poverty doesn't exist because some societies aren't advanced enough, are backward or something. Poverty is an oppression, liberation theology says, that is produced and maintained by the way society is structured. And liberation theology works for the transformation of society so that people who are objects of oppression become subjects of their own liberation. Liberation theology fights for the integral liberation of all persons and the whole person. This understanding of liberation is not just freedom, but transformation. This idea has influenced Black theology and feminist theology and more. Lots of theologies coming from the margins. Unitarian Universalists have also found the notion that living faithfully means working for liberation and wholeness to be pretty compelling. It's a call that feels inspirational to me and daunting and really needed. For our own health and well-being, as well as the well-being of others, for the sustainability of the human project, we need to shift our world from an ethic of domination to an ethic of love. This does not mean giving in to power or giving up power. The Reverend Dr. King pointed out once that there is nothing wrong with power if power is used correctly. You see, what happened, he says, is that some of our philosophers got off base. And one of the great problems of history is that the concepts of love and power have usually been contrasted as opposites, polar opposites, so that love is identified with a resignation of power and power with a denial of love. Now we've got to get this thing right, Dr. King says. What is needed is a realization that power without love is reckless and abusive, and love without power is sentimental and anemic. Power at its best is love implementing the demands of justice, and justice at its best is power correcting everything that stands against love. And this is what we must see as we move on. We must commit to liberating love. 20 years ago, the brilliant bell hooks lamented that when we work for change, or when we contemplate working for change, that we don't pay attention to our spiritual needs. Perhaps that's because we tend to make that mistake that King says the philosophers make. When we think about organizing for societal change, we think, oh, we don't need to waste time on love. Hook laments that there is no powerful discourse on love emerging either from politically progressive radicals or from the left. She worries that as long as we refuse to address fully the place of love in struggles for liberation, we will not be able to create a culture of conversion where there is a mass turning away from an ethic of domination. I think that a powerful discourse on love has been emerging more and more in the 20 years since Hooks wrote those words. And I think Unitarian Universalism has been part of that emergence, participated in it. Unitarian Universalists, we have been and are trying to be a people of faith who are a people of love and loving. Love is the power that holds us together and is at the center of our shared values. Hooks concludes that the moment we choose to love, we begin to move against domination, against oppression. The moment we choose to love, we begin to move towards freedom, to act in ways that liberate ourselves and others. That action is the testimony of love as the practice of freedom. Those words are from an essay of hers called Love as the Practice of Freedom, which I recommend to you. May we be a people of love. May we not be afraid of the power of a liberating love. May love hold, heal, and inspire us. May we be present to the needs of the spirit. May we be present to the pain and hurt in ourselves and in others in the world. May we be open to the possibility of transformation and hold to a relentless hope. May we give ourselves to love and to loving. May we find that in that giving is our fulfillment, our healing, and our liberation. May all beings be loved into liberation and wholeness. No quiz next week.